Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Adventure Audio Podcast. This episode is featuring Pete Stetna. Pete is a professional cyclist. He spent about 10 years racing in the Pro Tour, a lot of European racing, Grand Tour racing, really successful career there, and is now a privateer. He's focused more on mountain bike and gravel racing. And what that means is he's a one-man team. So he's really racing for himself now, which is really cool. We talk about that and how he made that career transition. He's also from a cycling family. Both his dad and his uncle were professional cyclists, so we get into that a little bit. His fastest known time attempt on the White Rim Trail, gravel racing. He's got some great stories to share with us, which is really fun. Craft beer, we just get to talk about a lot of different things. Pete is a super cool guy, super nice guy. Was very, very gracious with his time, and we really appreciate him spending it with us. It was awesome to get to know him a little bit. He and Tyler have known each other for a really long time, and Pete shares a little bit of a story about coming up when Tyler was sort of at the height of his career, and Pete was just a young guy looking up to him. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Free Lunch Coffee. Free Lunch Coffee is on a mission to end child hunger from this world. When a child doesn't have to worry about their next meal, they can focus on improving their natural gifts and talents to make a real difference in this world. With every bag of coffee you buy from Free Lunch Coffee, you're supporting a child to get a meal for 2 weeks. Free Lunch Coffee gives away 50% of the money they make, 50, to end child hunger. Their coffee is specialty grade. It's certified organic and fair trade. They offer 100% money back guarantee for 30 days. And right now they're offering a 10% discount code to the listeners of this podcast. So use coupon code ADVENTURE and you can check out at freelunchcoffee.com. This is a organization that we wanted to reach out to and see if they wanted to run an ad on the podcast, because 50% of their profit to buy lunches for people, for kids, is unbelievable. So we thought that that was really, really cool, and we hope that you can check them out at freelunchcoffee.com. On to Pete Stetna. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Real.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's funny that you mentioned that. I turned on my phone yesterday, and there in my podcast feed was the Marginal Gains podcast that had been downloaded, and you were on it. And I was like, well, shit, what a coincidence that is.
Yeah,
so it was fun. I gave it a listen. It's great.
Good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Our podcast is not like that, but I love that podcast. It's great. Like, for people who really love to nerd out on all of the little details, they do a great job. And we've had Eldon on our pod before.
Oh, nice.
He's like, I've been listening to him for a long time when he was back on the Paceline podcast and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So you did it. Did you do it the same day as Amity Rockwell?
Yeah. So that was the whole plug, was, you know, that was my big COVID, my fast thing for COVID pivot. To make it worthwhile and to get Canyon to, you know, pay for the film, it was, let's bring Amity in and have Canyon athletes, you know, double tap it, like take the men's and women's record. So mine was very much like the men's was very established already with Keegan and Payson and all these guys, but the women's really hadn't caught fire yet. So Amity was kind of just establishing it, but then she did it luckily and broke it. But like literally a few days later, like another girl went out and then another one and another one. So everyone's already in on this thing. And the women's time has dropped 4 or 5 times in October alone. It's crazy. So I mean,
do you think we'll ever see something like that again? Because COVID's so unique, right? Like everybody had time to go, all these top level athletes had time to go and try and smash it.
I think it's here to stay. I mean, it's catching fire now. And like, I mean, it's, you know, Velanews told me that like that's their highest traffic story right now. And
really?
Yeah. It's, you know, in the way that it's catching fire, because it catches fire and imagination of the general public better, because anyone can go do this ride and it's a cool ride. And the Coca-Pelli just got dropped, which is like another big one that I'll target later. And I mean, it's not going to replace racing, but people care about this. It's definitely catching imaginations. So
totally. Right. And then the recreational athlete can go and ride the same route, right? And even if they do it 4 or 5 hours slower, they at least have some context and it's accessible to everybody.
Yeah. It's very much in the reason why gravel itself has exploded, I think. But it's just, it's nice to, it is COVID specific right now because it's the best way to compete against each other without actually competing with each other. But at the same time, like, I think it's free. It's its own thing. It's you know, it's so big in the running world already. FKTs have been around forever. Like, it's just, it's coming into cycling, and it's its whole other side. Yeah.
So. Yeah, we were talking about exactly that, that there's an awesome website for runners, mm-hmm. for FKTs, and they've got, you know, it's all like mapped out for all these like dots that you can follow and see times, and people can, you know, they can announce their intentions to try and take a time and stuff like that. And that doesn't really exist for cycling yet, but I hope it does really soon, like where there's like a centralized resource for that, because it's a super cool thing.
Talk to guys who want to make websites around it and stuff. I've even thought of like owning the site and building stuff around it, but that's a lot of work.
Yeah,
you guys should do it.
Just as long as somebody else does it.
Go get a web developer.
You know, but I mean, it's not an overly complicated website application. You just need to integrate a map, but you do need to keep track of all of these people's attempts, because it's not like a Strava KOM, right? Just like you said on marginal gains.
Yeah.
That's different and sort of easier to manage. But if you have people announcing their intentions, and then you know, you've got to get all their spot track information, and you know, do you have witnesses and all those kinds of wrinkles to it, right? Like were there any established rules that you had to try and follow for this?
No, I mean, it is really very much an honor system still, which is kind of the beauty of it. There's no rules and regulations. There is, you know, like an official Strava segment that people are using to validate their effort, you know, and that's, you know, there can be so many different FKTs, right? Like there can be, like right now, the most popular that White Rim I did and Coca-Pelle Trail that Kurt Reschneider did like 2 days ago, that Lachlan Morton did this spring. It was, you know, it's self-supported, no help, solo effort, like purest of pure effort you can imagine. But like, I mean, there's no issue in saying like, okay, like I have the current self-supported FKT on the White Rim, but who's to say someone else doesn't go out and gets feed zones, like 3 points on the course, has aid help and all that. And they can just claim like, you know, this is the fastest supported version, fully supported, like as if there were a race out there almost.
Running does exactly that. They've got on that website, they've got the supported effort and the non, right? And then in cycling, supported, that's a can of worms, because do you have pacers meet you at certain points or you draft? And...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be cool. I actually, one of my early COVID projects was actually like, let's try and break 6 hours on the Leadville course, like kind of like the breaking two marathon thing. Like we could have, you know, like had pacers and pro guys, like basically trying to lead me out and pace me until I had to take over and finish it off, you know, and that would be a very supported effort, same aid stations as Leadville, that kind of thing. But it's all different right now. And, you know, the White Rim, like that was the big drama before, was, you know, Quinn Simmons, went out and did it from a different point of Payson's, like hit the hardest climb of the day, fresher, did the whole circuit from a different starting point, basically. And he did break Payson's time. And everyone was like, well, you know, half the crew was like, you know, that's not really in the spirit of it. Like, you didn't adhere to like kind of what Payson set out to really establish and make a thing. And then the other half was like, I mean, fastest time is fastest time. The loop is the loop. So it's kind of like that Everesting thing too, you know, like I personally hate the idea of going up and down the same hill for, you know, 8,000 meters. That sounds so boring. Like, why can't you create different sides of hills, you know, and different loops? But like, that's kind of also the reason that like those rules exist. Like those people who set out to create Everesting, like have that rule. And I mean, I could go ride downhill in a tailwind and do 4K faster and call it, you know, the individual pursuit, but that's not really the point, you know? So.
Pete, I love what you're up to today. You know, I've kind of followed you since you were a kid.
Thanks, man.
And, you know.
I followed you since I was a kid too. It's mutual.
What's that?
I said, yeah, I remember Boulder together, and yeah, we had some fun winter rides. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you grew up with your father's a pro cyclist, your uncle Wayne was a pro cyclist, and you know, I'd just like to hear maybe a little bit about how you got into cycling and kind of your journey a little bit. It's been awesome following along.
Oh, for sure.
You know, gone through some tough things, and you're very, very resilient. And it's awesome seeing you really thriving right now. And you're a great ambassador for the sport. So,
yeah. Oh, thanks. Okay, I guess, well, we're recording, aren't we, now? Or
yeah, the whole we are, time. Yeah.
Real quick, like, what's the deal with this podcast before we get into that? What do you want me to, you know, like, what kind of angle? Are we just doing kind of an all-encompassing thing? Or what just, do you want to jam on?
Freelance, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. And if there's anything you want cut out, we can cut it out. Yeah.
Okay, no worries. No, I'm happy to. And then when this goes live, you know, send me the links and I'll share it through my channels and, you know, spread it all. Like, happy to.
Thanks, man. We appreciate that.
Yeah, Pete, thanks for coming on.
Oh, for sure. All right. Sorry, let's start at the beginning kind of thing you're asking.
Yeah, so all the way back, like, when you do your earliest memories involve your dad and your uncle and bikes?
Right. Yeah, you know, I grew up in Boulder, Colorado, hotbed of cycling. Wasn't really interested in it. I mean, my dad was not the pro who rested on his laurels. You know, like, he has all his cycling jerseys in a duffel bag in the attic. There's like maybe one trophy here and there. And but I found cycling through mountain bikes. The 24 Hours of Moab with the local YMCA team was like my first big event. So I actually started on the off-road. Once I found cycling through my own without family pressure, you know, everyone always thinks, you know, you're a product of this American cycling family, blah, blah, blah. Then I had the family to fall back on. You know, my uncle works for Shimano. So used parts, warranted parts were easy to get, all that stuff. And they had, you know, the basic training ideas from them being a pro. So I was able to grow pretty fast. And then it naturally transitioned to road with, you know, I was a junior during, you know, the Lance era, and when Tyler was smashing it up there. You know, so I was looking up to all these guys, and it was easy to fall in love with the tour and all that. Very much a pipeline rider. I mean, just junior, found early in Boulder, signed with Fodder's team. Always continued to dabble on the mountain bike, though. Like, even, you know, Garmin at the time, now EF, was, if I was home between, like, on summer break, if I wasn't doing the tour, like, they were cool if I hopped in a local mountain bike race and stuff. So I always stayed off-road a little bit for fun. I was always a little happier there, even though I didn't realize it. It was just, you know, biking is biking in my mind. I started doing the whole world tour thing and the dreams there and the cutthroat lifestyle and the monk lifestyle, and lived and breathed it for a decade. I really carved a good niche out as like a top mountain domestique. I wasn't a big winner, but, you know, I had dreams of that. And then, I had this really bad accident, in 2015. And that was kind of a turning point in my career. I shattered my leg, broke a bunch of ribs, shattered my kneecap. A lot of teams wrote me off, had my back against a wall, made a comeback, it's pretty well documented, but, you know, doctors said that, you know, you can maybe walk again, or you can, you know, we might have to cut off your leg if the bone doesn't heal right. Luckily it healed right. Made a return a few months later at Tour Utah, while walking with a cane, but still racing my bike, and I finished. And Trek was like, oh man, like, if you can do that, we believe in you. So, we'll give you a lifeline contract. And that was kind of my big moment in the world tour. Honestly, it wasn't a result, but I salvaged my career, started the tour, within a year later, and did all that, finished the tour, and spent a few more years in the world tour. But, I just wasn't quite the same rider after that. You know, I did it for ages, but, I just kind of started dabbling in the, alternative scene, which is now not alternative, last right. year. And, you know, I really pushed, Trek to let me join, do some of these races stateside, DK, which is now Unbound Gravel, Burt Belgian Waffle Ride, Leadville, fell in love with it. And I had this reckoning moment that was just like, oh my God, this makes sense. Like, there's so much interest in it. People are recognizing me in world tour races for winning the Belgian Waffle Ride. This is crazy. I'm happier here. I think I can make this work. So I struck up on my own, started, I'm a privateer now, a one-man team doing all the logistics and all the contracts and the hustle around basically running a team, even though it's just me, but it's a lot more validating too. It's like starting your own business, you know? So that's where I'm at.
Totally. Yeah. That's so cool.
You look happy. You look happy.
I am happy this year. And man, this is the best year to do it because I could create and create during COVID lockdowns. You know, I can't imagine the stress of, you know, trying to fight for a contract with limited racing in the World Tour right now. I mean, that's just brutal. So, you know, I was able to create Zwift challenges with my sponsors and all that and just stay relevant in cycling, which was at the end of the day, like that's all it is you're, you know, trying to promote by riding bikes. So.
Yeah, for sure. And how much more we've talked with, like we talked with Ted King about this.
Oh, nice.
And like how different is your lifestyle now that you're not in the pro tour? Because like, I think people, fans have like an understanding that it's that you got to be pretty dialed in most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the first time I realized how much that meant was when I actually read Tyler's book back in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about getting back from like 6-7 hour training rides, eating an apple and drinking like 2 liters of carbonated water to feel full and going to sleep. So he would.
Man, those
he
days just sucked, like, didn't they?
That's crazy.
Crazy. You know, and it's such a traditional, like, yeah, I get it. And I did it forever. But, you know, my lifestyle is very different now, but I'm actually just as fast, which is the interesting thing. I mean, you need to have done those grand tours and done that to know how you can push and to adapt. But, you know, this year it was kind of a reckoning for me in that, you know, just without the constant, the jet lag and the racing and actually, you know, I stopped standing on the scale so much. I train just as hard, push myself. And, you know, gravel's like one of gravel's top rules is you can't say no to a beer, you know, like you don't want to be that nitpicky weight weenie pro. Drank more craft beer than I ever have in my life this year. And I was lighter than my Tour de France weight, actually.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Just, I think it just goes to show that, you know, a happy racer is a fast racer, and like those cortisol levels and the stress around fighting for the wheel and the contract and everything all the time, you know, like, you know, World Tour racing is so cutthroat. And just once like all that stress dropped away and I was happier doing what I was, like, I went faster, you know, for me anyway, you know, and that's, I found, you know, where I can thrive better, I think.
Yeah. And it proves that there's a whole equation beyond just calories in, calories out, right? Oh. In terms of your overall health and well-being.
100%. Yeah. Maybe the equipment's faster now too. I don't
know. Probably.
Well, you know, hats off to Trek for throwing you that lifeline. You know, it's
A
pro sport. Like, you know, some people don't get that opportunity, and you know, that helped you extend your career. And now you're into something completely different. And you know, was there a moment like when you? What was the moment when you decided to like switch? Was it when you did the Belgian waffle ride and
had no, like, you know, it was much of a, it was a very slow calculated effort. Everyone, it kind of looked like a, you know, off the cuff move with the announcement at the end of the year. But no, I mean, Trek, yeah, I'm eternally grateful for, you know, saving my career that way. And I had 4 great years with them. No, how it went down is, you know, Belgian waffle ride was my first big gravel event and I won it, and it was mind boggling, the metrics around it. DK confirmed that, you know, and then Leadville was just pure fun and was even more validation. And, you know, I realized I was happier here. So I was up for contract renewal. And my agent went to Trek and all the other teams, but it was kind of with the caveat that like, this made sense this year from marketing, but I also had more fun here. Like any team I sign with, like I want, like this gravel thing is coming. I want to be a gravel racing specialist, but still do all the World Tour stuff. Very much kind of what Lockie is doing with EF right now. You know, that was where I wanted to, it just made sense. And it was a very obvious business decision in my agent's mind. However, you know, the World Tour being so traditional, just they really didn't see it that way. You know, honestly, a couple of team managers thought I was this beer drinking gravel racer that occasionally rode my road bike. It just everyone saw, like, if you're not on the road bike doing the world tour training all the time, then you're not dedicated, which I get. I mean, it's that's how the world is there. And so it kind of became this reckoning moment where, you know, I could search for a contract where it was exclusively road in Europe, or I could just try to jump off the cliff, you know, and I decided on the latter. You know, my wife is here. We don't live full time in Europe. And it just, you know, I just had a bit of faith that this was, with what I had seen in 2019, that if I worked hard enough, this could be a thing, and be lucrative enough to still call myself a professional bike racer. And I make my living riding and racing my bike. So, that was the reason. It would have been fun to do both, but in the end, like, just, you know, now that we're 12 months out from when I made that call, I am very glad that I didn't even, you know, take a half and half program. Like, just being able to have these connections with, you know, direct with companies that support me and creating my brand around it. It's been a steep learning curve, but it has been oh so much worth it.
Well, as much as things have changed over the last couple of years in that respect and how that has become a market for people like you to be able to make that career transition, I think that we're really just scratching the surface. I think we're at like ground zero for what this can be for people. So, which is super cool because we're seeing such cool creative events come up and I hope that they all make it.
Yeah. I hope so. I think the creativity is astounding. You know, you've seen that with the pandemic, especially, is like, if anything, the human race is freaking creative. We find ways around things, you know, with virtual challenges and whatever else it is. But, you know, and that's also a very big part of what I'm doing, is I agree with you. I think this has, I don't want to be one of the few gravel pros and, you know, be a bigger fish in a different pond. Like, I want, like, this is a template, like, I can do this. I want more people to come do this. As long as their head is, you know, in the right place with not sacrificing fun. And, you know, I don't think anyone wants world tour road racing no one wants gravel to become off-road road races.
Definitely not. People feel amateurs and pros both feel very, very protective of that, I think. And yeah. It's like, so Celine Yeager was on our podcast. She writes for Bicycling Magazine. Yeah, and she said it's like cycling finally has its marathon, which I think is exactly the right way to put it, because there could be people winning marathons in 206 in New York City, and there's thousands and thousands of amateurs racing on the same course on the same day, getting cheered on by the same crowd. And cycling didn't have that, right?
And it's that shared experience that's really powerful right now, I think. That's why I love it. So, I hope travel continues to boom. I think it will. You know, there's a few people saying the pandemic and the cancellations of the big multi-thousand person events is going to kill it. But from what I saw at Belgian Waffle Ride, like a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, it's fine. I mean, people want to do this. So
tell us a little bit about that one. I was super happy to see that went off. And there were some big names there. Like, what was the protocol around COVID and how did they sort of manage it? Because it seems like it was a big success.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Michael Marks and Monuments of Cycling, that's the organizing crew of BWR, and they had actually, you know, created a series beyond just San Diego this year. And there was North Carolina and Utah. Utah, for better or worse, are a lot more lax in their COVID restrictions. They were eager to permit the event. And Michael and his team set out to create a pretty robust COVID mitigation plan that they hoped would become a blueprint for other organizers to take and adapt to their communities should they want to put on events. It was pretty strict. And I'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, I personally decided to go because I understand organizers trying to go forward. I mean, this is their living too. And if they're trying to do so in a responsible manner, you know, I want to support that as long as I feel like I can safely attend the event. You know, I've invested a lot of money, ran my bank account to zero to get one of these freaking Sprinter vans that everybody loves now. And I am fully self-contained. So I'm not dealing with hotels and airfare. I was road tripping all over the Southwest this year, doing adventures, promoting bikes. But also, I mean, the only interaction I have is take out food with a mask, pump and gas, occasional grocery store runs. Like I'm, and I've tested negative on multiple tests. So I feel like I could safely attend. And I decided to go and see how it shook out. And 2 weeks post event, there's been zero reported cases from the BWR in Utah. So
awesome.
Yeah, I checked in with them. That was great to hear that. But so their protocol was masks around the start, finish, all the time, mandatory, and they were policing it pretty hard. Registration was contactless. You had to verbally give an affidavit that you have not been in contact, you haven't had symptoms, all that kind of stuff. They started all the groups in pods of 60, pods of 50 riders, you know, spaced, you know, like 20 to 50 feet apart or something, like for half a mile down the street. And there was a neutral start. So once they started, you know, everyone, the group kind of came together, but you're moving and you had to keep your mask on, you know, so it was a big group. And that's why I was nervous of everyone kind of shuffling in that amoeba that is the Peloton, right? You had to leave your mask on for the 4 mile neutral. And then when they dropped the flag, you could take your mask off. The race started, the separation started happening. And that's where I was most nervous. But, you know, if you, all we can do until there's, you know, a concise, you know, leadership from the government is, you know, make our best decisions. And from what I've been seeing, you know, once you're moving and that air dispersion, especially at some sort of mild speed on a bike, and the fact that you're not directly behind any one person consistently, I mean, you're always moving in that group. The risk is extremely low from what I can tell. And the race went down. The festival afterwards, there were tables of maximum of 10 people, your crew, that were all, every picnic table was spaced 10 feet apart, mask all the time, podium, whatever, unless you were having your post-ride meal or beer, you know, so, and hand sanitizer everywhere. Aid stations were self-serve, so you could only grab the banana you were going to touch, or like, instead of grabbing pretzels or M&Ms that have always been a thing that have always been kind of gross, you know, just like shove your hand in the bucket. Like yeah. Now there's like Dixie cups. So you could only grab like, you know, the Dixie cup with the M&Ms, or, you know, volunteers were constantly wiping down tables and the water jug dispenser, all that. So it went well, in my opinion. The only thing I could say to be more strict would to actually be provide a negative result upon arriving somehow, you know, like you have to get it within, you know, 48, 72 hours of coming to the event. And maybe once tests are even easier, they're pretty easy now, but that's like the most extreme version. But I was pretty happy with how it went down.
How'd the race go?
Thanks for asking, Tyler. I lost in the sprint. Surprise.
I know.
Gravel race came down 5.5 hours later, 6 hours later, to a two-up sprint with Keegan Swenson, who's the national mountain bike champ. I made my move on the hard climb in the end. He caught me in the chunky single track afterwards, even though he had broke his front brake. He's just got crazy mountain biker skills. And then in true gravel fashion, you know, we exited the single track together after both, you know, hitting each other multiple times throughout the day. We were pretty blown out. And the last five-ish miles are on an urban bike path, you know, and there could be walkers with dogs and leashes, and we weren't sure, you know, and it was kind of net downhill. And, you know, we just kind of gentleman handshake was, you know, like, hey, like, let's not screw each other over in dicey corners. Like, let's get through this and just drag race sprint it out. And he beat me in the sprint pretty handily, but which stung, but at the same time, you know, that's what gravel's about. I mean, it's a attrition gentleman's racing still, which is so much fun. So great guy to lose to. And currently I have him on the white rim now. So now we're definitely rivals, friendly rivals, frenemies.
So the form is good. You were right there for, you know, vying for the win there. And
thanks. Yeah.
FKT. And that was awesome to watch, by the way. So anybody listening, you should watch it on what it's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's Canyon's YouTube channel called Lowering the White Rim FKT. And it chronicles Amity's and myself attempt and the failure and redemption of mine. So,
yeah. It's really well done. Really
thanks.
Well done. And beginning of the year, you had you were riding really strong at what was it called, Land Run? And then you had a mechanical problem. But, you know, take out the mechanical problem, you've had good form pretty much, I'd say, the whole season.
Thanks. Yeah, I... It used to be Land Run. It's now called Mid South for racial reasons, but you know, they're pretty progressive about that. So it's now the Mid South, and this year it was the Mud South. I honestly don't know how anyone could do that event without having a equipment sponsor, because literally everything besides the frame had to be replaced after that. It was messy.
Fully replaced.
Oh yeah, I mean shifters, cables, brake pads. Pedals, everything, chain, trailer pulleys, like,
wow.
It's just that grime gets in there and it just like grits and grinds away at everything. You know, it was actually one of the best power files of my entire career, because like the mud was so sticky. It was like a 5-6 hour hill climb. Like, you literally had to earn every pedal stroke. If you coasted for 3 seconds, you would stop. So it was like, It was pretty gnarly. I hope it's a little drier next year. So
that's part of your new business, right? I mean, you got to figure it out yourself, right? There's no real assistance.
No.
Can you get assistance at the rest stops? Is that how it works?
Every race is different. Every organizer sets their own rules, and Mid-South has a midpoint aid station. That's where I had my mechanic and one of my best friends, Big Tall Wayne, there with, like, he had a power washer and stuff. And all of us, I think the lead group was like seven guys. We all rolled in there together. And like, again, we're like, hey, everyone, like, go to the bathroom, get your bike clean, like, take a moment. You know, there's a pretty big gap behind the next chasing group. Like, deal with what you got to deal with. And like, let's meet up again on the other side. And we did. Like, I was kind of out there a little earlier than a few others, but I kind of stopped on the highway, took a pee, like, you know, waited for everyone else. And then we, you know, started racing again, which was pretty cool. And then other races, it is fully self-supported. Like, you can't accept help unless, you know, you have to go into gas stations for food. So it's all different and it's all fun and all fresh right now.
Yeah. Great.
Awesome.
Hey, I'd love to hear about, number one, how's your dad doing?
That's a story that it does not have a happy ending, unfortunately. He's alive. For those that don't know, he has a traumatic brain injury from a car bike collision. His recovery has not gone as well as we'd hoped. I mean, he's not a vegetable, but he's severely handicapped, and, parts of him work, like, logically, but then the executive functioning doesn't come through, and he lives in a bit of an alternate reality where he thinks either you believe him and believe everything he says, which doesn't always logically make sense, and if you don't, he thinks you're kind of his enemy and trying to hold him back. So our relationship has kind of had to move to where, you know, if there's an issue, I can step in and try to mitigate and help him, but he's put himself in some precarious situations in the past, unfortunately. It's not him, it's the brain injury. It's just, it's different. So unfortunately he's in a group home right now with some help. So.
All right. Well, we're sending him positive thoughts.
Thanks. Yeah. Always wear your helmet. I mean, he was too, but even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
That was 2013. Yeah.
Out of Boulder, right?
He was descending a canyon in Boulder. And it was just this weird circumstance, but a car pulled out in front of him. He went down, landed more on his face, on the front of his face, so he didn't really hit his helmet. The helmet didn't, you know, it wasn't there to protect him because it was more like on his forehead. Flight for life out. I was actually in Europe before a big one-day race, and I got this knock on the door. I was like, oh, damn it. It's anti-doping, like waking me up. But it was the team Soignier, and finally they had somehow gotten through my parents to this hotel in France to, gotten hold of a Soignier that woke me up from the hotel. And then they were like, something's up with your dad. And, you know, I was on Garmin at the time, and they were awesome. I mean, within, 45 minutes of waking up and getting this news, like I had a plane ticket in my inbox. So they drove me, instead of to the race start, to the airport, had, two or three flights to get back to Colorado. That was the hardest part, was they were like, he's not going to make it, and so you're no connectivity in an airplane for 12 hours, right? Like that sucks. Feel bad for the people sitting next to me, but, he got back and he was in a coma when I landed. He was still alive. He was in a coma. And then he actually eventually came out of it, which was awesome. So, yeah.
Man. And then 2 years later, you have an accident. You almost lose your leg.
Cycling gives a lot and it takes a lot, huh? Yeah. I mean, you know that as well as anyone. It's just, it's a great sport, but it's hard.
It's real hard. So, looking forward to 2021. I'd like to hear about your schedule for 2021, if you know it or anything. And I'd like to hear about your pay dirt event.
It's
really cool that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's I kind of have two plans, because sponsors are asking as well, what are you thinking for next year? The cool thing about COVID, biking, my sponsors during COVID is they are all renewing right now. I mean, they believe in my work ethic, and they've seen my effort to pivot and create, and they're standing by me. So that's really cool. When you can align yourself with people who share your beliefs. And I have the plan A, which is things happen as normal. I mean, you have to be optimistic right now. I hope Unbound and Belgian Waffle Ride all happen. I hope we can party with 4,000 people. I hope there's a vaccine,
We've received some really positive news on that this week. So
yeah. If not, with how Belgian Waffle Ride went and in the warmer summer months, I'm pretty positive that there will at least be 500-600 person events in certain states. So do that, do more of this FKT stuff. That's kind of the plan.
Do you have any ones in particular you're looking at that you can talk about, or you've got to keep it under wraps?
Oh, I mean, it's basically a recreation of 2020. So every event that I had to defer, I mean, I can talk about them all. It's just, they're all
talk about the FTKs.
Oh, the FKTs. FKTs. I really would love to go for the Coca-Pelle Trail next. That was on my top list this spring. So my FKT love affair with FKTs has gone back to March, and when COVID first started. It was the Mid-South had gone down. That was like the same week that New York was spiking, and we didn't really know what the deal was yet. So we flew home, which was sketchy, but we had to get home. Didn't have masks, didn't know masks were a thing. Everyone thought it was touching at that point.
Totally. Yeah.
And at that point, Unbound, DK, feel like I have to keep kind of saying both until everyone knows it. DK is now called Unbound. They thought that was still going to go forward at the end of May. And I was like, man, I got to keep fitness somehow without all these other springtime races. And I immediately went like, okay, White Rim FKT, like this is something, I can do while I have good form. And it's a great training and also a a publicity thing. And literally, as I was making plans and renting an RV to go drive to Moab, all the national parks shut down. Moab was like, don't come here. We don't have hospital capacity. And all that got put on the back burner. And then Moab got too hot with, you know, summertime is always over 100 degrees every day. But I did have a list of certain FKTs, and Cocopelli was high on it. And then Lockie with EF beat me to it, and he broke it in May. And now just last week, Kurt Refschneider, who's like one of the OGs of ultra mountain bike and bike packing, went and beat Lockie's time back. So there's already, that's going. I would love to throw my name in the ring with that one. I'm kind of drawing the line at the one day still. You know, I know Colorado Trail and Tour Divide are things, but I feel like, I feel like the multi-day things kind of become a sleep deprivation contest.
We've talked about that many times on this podcast.
Yeah. I like going fast still, but like, I mean, I don't want to like do the 2 hour nap and then just start riding again for 20 hours. I feel like I could. I mean, someday I'm not going to say never, but I like Cocopelli, you know, like Kurt's time is right around 11 hours and that's totally good in a day. I could even go for a 26 hour with no sleep, but just one time, you know, but,
right.
So that's kind of where I'm currently finding my niche, I think.
Yeah, that's and this is with no disrespect. In fact, it's the opposite. This is with nothing but respect for people who set those times. Like,
oh my gosh,
like
yes.
like Mike Hall back in the day and Leo Wilcox and stuff. But
oh yeah,
there has to be some sort of health implication to doing that for 2 weeks, right? I mean, there has to be.
I mean, you take a picture of those guys' face after 4 days, and it looks like my face at the end of the tour, you know, like just
well, look at
bags
under
the eyes and
what
swollen.
Ted just did in Arkansas, right? Like,
oh, that's
you
crazy.
Know, he
what happened?
He set the oaks. Go ahead, Pete, you tell the story.
You can probably tell it better than me, actually. It's inspiring.
Yeah, what's the name of the race?
Arkansas High Country. It's a race around Arkansas. Like a multi-day.
It kind of like circumnavigates the state, I think. And he set the FKT on that course, a bike pack setup, in 4 days, 20 hours. And he looked like he got hit by a truck after. Yeah.
I mean, and that's the whole, like, you know, you have your bivy and you pull it out and sleep for a few hours and then get back on the bike and go to gas stations and get Twinkies and Pop-Tarts and get back on the bike. And
yeah. And he was pretty open in his post-race report about how thrashed he was. And Ted's done some super epic stuff. So he has all the context in the world to describe it. But he was just talking about like how his throat felt and his eyes were burning and his lips were chapped. Like he was just like, not just his legs, but his entire body was just,
he was probably
fried.
Wondering if he had the corona every time he got out of a gas station, but it's like, no, you're just effed, man. you know, and there's one thing I'm actually kind of like thinking about it a lot just this week with that. And you said Ted set the FKT, and I don't want to take anything away from Ted. What he did was amazing, but just as this thing grows, I would say he set the course record. And I feel like FKT needs to be something different because it was an organized event. You know, there's a set route. And the biggest thing I feel is like he had to take off on this certain day. Whereas the FKT, I am really enjoying it because it's unbound, right? It's just freedom. Like you can choose the date, the time, the weather conditions, all that. And so what he did is amazing. I mean, that is the Arkansas course record. I just, I'm wondering as FKT grows, again, this is no dig at Ted. This is just a general observation of mine. I think as FKT grows, it's just that the term is going to get thrown around like IPA with beer, right? You know, and so I would say Ted has the course record. Congrats on that. I don't want to do it. I guess if someone went out and did this in February, they could and beat Ted, then they could say they have the FKT. I don't know. It's just, it's something I was thinking about.
That's a great point. I think it's like a Strava KOM and FKT and a course record are all different things, right? Because to your point, you could go ride the Leadville course in a different day where conditions were favorable and you might be able to ride it faster than the fastest winner ever.
Yeah.
But that's not a course record. That's an FKT. same course, different day, different thing.
Yep, I think so. At least that's where I'm kind of doing it personally. I mean, there's no UCI regulation on this, so
not yet.
And hopefully there won't be. Hopefully there won't be.
Right.
So what, next September, is your charity event there, Pete?
Yeah, you know, the pay dirt hopefully is going forward. We postponed it this year. You know, there's a lot to be seen with how things evolve. You know, it's a 50-50 event between me and my organizing buddies at Bike Monkey, who put on other big events. Have you ever done Levi's Grand Fondo, Tyler?
You know, I never have, but it's on my bucket list for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
By the way,
Levi. Yeah, oh, he's good. He's up. Good. He's located up in Squaw in Tahoe now, full time. Riding his bike way too much still. he's my training buddy.
Good. He trains harder than anybody. You know. He's super disciplined.
Oh yeah, I learned a lot of pro tips from him when I moved to Sonoma County, and we did a lot of training together. Bike Monkey also puts on my event. They're good friends. Being in California, where the group size is pretty restrictive, and just general, our local community has not done great with the virus in general. They've had to shutter a lot. So I'm pretty hopeful that, you know, they're able to come back next year and that we're able to do bigger things. And should that happen, the one benefit is my event is actually in Carson City on the Nevada side. So amazing course, a lot of fun, just no rules. I mean, we were planning on having a mechanical bull that you would ride for time bonuses. Like, you know, like this is what we're doing. Like, this is gravel. I hope it goes forward, you know. It's September 11th. That's the date. It benefits the High Fives Foundation, which because my dad's recovery didn't go as great and my history, you know, the way I could really help give back is the High Five support injured mountain athletes. So, you know, you hurt yourself biking, skiing, ATVing, surfing, whatever. They help you get your life back on track. They, you know, teach you to, you know, rip on a sit ski or a quad bike so you can, you know, shred the mountain again someday and still be an athlete. You know, these guys are same as us. They're lifetime athletes. They're our tribe. So benefits the High Fives Foundation. There's a custom beer out of it. I partner with a brewery. We make a good hazy IPA every year. Nice. You guys come out. Love to have you guys out.
I like it. And it's not really, well, it's a different kind of race. You have some segments along the way. Is that right? You can do
it.
You don't have to do them all. It's all, and it's not combined. I like the way you kind of structure it.
Yeah, that's competitive. Yeah, it's that enduro style timing segment. You know, we did this actually with my road fondo. It started as a road fondo in Tahoe years ago. And then now with my career, we've moved towards gravel. But it just embraces the community of riding bikes. You know, like, you know, you can still be competitive and, you know, rip each other on the segments, whether it's a climb or a flat. But then, you know, you regroup at the end of the segment or at the aid station. You know, you can take a longer stop at an aid station, or someone who's a little behind can take a quicker stop and leave with a faster group. And then we broke it down too. So there's, you know, we did, if you're not a climber, you know, you're a heavier guy and more of a powerhouse, like, don't even worry about the climbs, just go for the sprints and get the sprinters segment jersey, you know, and all that. So, It's a lot more curated, and you can basically pick and choose how you want to be competitive and then have a good time the rest of the day. That's how we roll with the Pater. So
that's great. Good for you. And I like how you're giving back.
Thanks. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Trying to.
Well, I think you have a long list of sponsors to thank, and I don't know, would love to talk about those sponsors a little bit, Pete. Do you have any spots open on your jersey for 2021?
Yeah. I'm talking with a few, but I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. You know, I've got 9 to 10, and I feel like any more than that, you almost start diluting yourself too much, because then you're always having to plug a different thing, right? And all that. Whereas I can really focus well on 9 to 10, but still have all my bases covered financially and equipment wise, you know? So I've got all the bike stuff covered, all the equipment, shoes, helmets, all that. But also, you know, a couple of non-endemics, you know, so food, coffee, beer, that kind of stuff. And I can run down it, but it's, and you really have to think about, you know, if for anyone who's trying to become a privateer, you really have to think about your brand and what you stand for and align with companies that do that, you know? So, you know, I had a difficult decision last year where there was like this extreme, you know, caffeine company who was really interested, but then, you know, they were kind of direct competition with Clif Bar, and Clif Bar, I'm close friends with Gary, the founder, right. NorCal based. And I had to think about who I am, you know, I'm Pete, the half hippie from Boulder, and I like organic granola and, yeah. you know, sustainable energy. Like I don't do caffeine shots and all that. So, you know, even though they actually had a slightly higher offer, it was, you know, you have to stay true to what you believe in. And a good, few others good. That have kind of.
Yeah. Good you. For you. Yeah, that's awesome.
And, you know, so the portfolio real quick, it runs down at, you know, Canyon Bikes. They've been a big champion in what I'm doing. It fits just because, like I said, it's you have to find that commonality. And where I did, you know, they are disruptive. They are changing the way bikes are sold and bought. And that's kind of what I did. I broke away from the World Tour mold and started my own thing. So Canyon's been super supportive of that. Shimano, tip to tail, I'm talking shoes, helmets, bike parts, wheels, glasses, all of it. You know, long history with them. Top end stuff, some R&D, Sportful clothing, been with them. I've known them for years, since I was first a young pro. And then, you know, there's Wahoo GPS, IRC tires, a lot of R&D with them. It's fun. It's collaborative.
Athletic. Yeah, I heard on Marginal Gains that you actually developed a tire with them, right?
Yeah, I got to actually sit down with them and create a new mountain bike tire that I used in my White Rim attempt.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was super fun. They're not naming it the Stetna, which is okay.
so close, eh?
What's the name of it?
It's still undecided. I wanted them to call it the Privateer, but I think there's a trademark around that from some other bike product out there, and it's a whole thing. It's an ongoing discussion.
how about the Pater? That'd be a cool tire name. Ties in nicely.
Oh, that would be. I might email them right after I get off this call.
There you go.
And there's a few others. I mean, I want to, you know, they all support me, and it's very obvious in my Instagram who they are. And they tell a great story. I just, for all the listeners, I don't want to just sound advertising and plug them all here, but they are all great, and there's a meaning behind all of them. So, Oh, this is,
that's great.
I kind of want to talk about, like, when we were kids in Boulder, and I was like this little junior that would show up, and Tyler like would just go on he put up with me, which was really cool. Like, we did this crazy ride up Left Hand Canyon and Ward in February and into Netherland. And I mean, oh man, I remember it was like February or January, right? And you were doing your tour stuff, and it was snow on the roads and all that, and bundled up, classic Colorado winter. Yeah. And afterwards, I was so blown out, I went straight back down to Boulder, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go do 3 more hours. And you like kept heading south and stuff. And...
That's funny. I mean, I always remember. Yeah, I remember you. I think my first memory of you was just like a size extra small jersey, and it was, you know, flapping in the wind, just a skinny little kid. But I was super nice and polite. And
thanks, yeah, Matt.
I was really good questions. And it's fun to see you kind of grow up, and you know, and you've had quite the journey, Pete. and it's been awesome. And I feel like you're just starting your best stuff right now, really.
I hope so. I hope this is a thing to stay.
Yeah, so. And you're still so motivated. Like, you know, there's a few individuals out there. Yeah, they're, you know, you can tell they're at their twilight of their career. Maybe they're doing gravel now, but you know, you're just getting fired up, and you're still excited to train super hard. And, you know, hopefully we're going to be reading about you for years and years. Yeah.
I hope so. I hope there's some other people coming to gravel, but
and it looks like you're having a ton of fun with it. And like, honestly, I've never seen you so happy. I mean, I get it, but you know, world tour is stressful, and you're always a little bit, you know, stressed out, even in the best of times. So,
right. Right.
So you look pretty relaxed and having fun and riding your bike fast. It was really cool watching that video of your FTK, is it?
We're gonna have to work on this.
FKT.
yeah,
it is a cool video. Everybody should go check that out. And it looks like you were ripping.
It was the current record for anyone who wants to go ride the White Rim is 5 hours 28 minutes and 23 seconds. That is an 18.5 mile an hour average, so 29.6K on off road,
which is a fast road pace.
I put aero bars on my mountain bike, and I'm not ashamed of it. It made a difference.
Oh, that was a smart. I noticed that on the video. Super smart decision, for sure, for sure. And you had a good choice, I think, on the helmet and.
And
you have a skin suit, or was that like a?
I did one of those road suits, you know, with the road race skin suits, you know, pockets and all that. The Sportful bomber suit.
Smart.
Yeah.
And took a little bit more water than we talked to Payson maybe a month or two ago, and you took a little bit more water than him.
Oh man, desert is so harsh and unforgiving. You know, there's no water refills out there unless you like go way off track and try to filter from the Colorado River early. And I mean, you start at the crack of dawn for the heat, right? And you're cold, you're super loaded from the night before, and you know, just so heavy with water and retention. And you don't drink anything for like the first 2 hours, and you're carrying all this water mass, and you just feels horrible. And then all of a sudden, like the sun rises, and you literally put down a bottle in 40 minutes. And you're like, oh my gosh, I have to start rationing. You know,
right?
The first time I did it. So if for anyone that didn't watch, I did it twice in 4 days. I missed it by 16 damn seconds, and it hurt. And I was at that point where I was literally unscrewing the bottle caps and like getting like the last drop onto my tongue to like wet my chalky mouth, you know, because that moisture, even if you're not, or sorry, that desert, even if you're not sweating, like it's so dry, it sucks moisture from your pores, from your mouth. And so I did it again, and I brought a slightly bigger third bottle, which just the 2 extra ounces made a difference. But
sounds crazy, but talk about like getting down to the margins of what's possible on that ride, right?
Well, and when you talk FKTs, it's so much more than racing, because you know, there's this whole other thing. Like you're trying to be light for self-sufficient, or light for going fast, but you also have to be self-sufficient in case anything goes wrong. I mean, all the deliberating between, do I bring like a tiny Allen tool, or do I bring like the full thing with chain breakers and all that? Like, you know, cause if you break down out there, you are screwed.
It's a long walk.
There's no follow car. There's no feed zones. There's no, you can choose the weather, the day. Like, so there's a whole other level of like logistical planning that goes into this, which is pretty fun if you really try to get into it and geek out on it.
Yeah, I like that. So you're checking the weather and what, wind direction too a little bit?
Yeah, I was trying to do all of it. I have that fancy app that the Jumbo Visma guys use that you can like basically create a Strava route, import it, and choose the day and the start time. And it tries to give you a prediction of like where and how strong the wind will be at different points on the course. The problem with the White Rim is it has like its own freaking, even if you look at Moab weather, it's not indicative of the canyon lands. So it was pretty hard to get, you know, I could at least choose days that were like light and variable instead of knowing like it's going to rip today and it's going to be slow. I was trying to nitpick all of that.
Yeah, but, you might as well.
Yeah.
So what was that like? You missed a record by 16 seconds. And so in the video, I was like, oh no, And then I was psyched to see you go back and do it again. Four days later, were you pretty recovered or?
That's where I relied on the world tour experience, you know, as you've done many times, like, you know, there's 3 days between Fletcher Wallon and Liège-Bastogne-Liège, two big 1 day climbing classics. And, I've done that many times. And it just stung so much, you know, this is my big COVID era project. The course was pretty slow. My record is not going to stand as soon as there's some good moisture out there and someone focuses on it. I think it'll drop again. And I know I'll have to make a return trip someday and just do it on a faster track. But, you know, it was all those little tips and tricks that helped me get it this time. And, sorry, I lost my train of thought though. What did you just ask me?
Where were we, Pete?
Just like what you think is your recovery, like how it went from 4 days to.
You know, it was just, I finished and that was my big COVID project. Like it had to happen this year. I wasn't going to wait till this thing. And 16 seconds, it was on a busy Friday. Like that's literally stopping for a Jeep on that trail, you know? I had a few too many beers at the campfire that night. And I called the wife the next morning and I said, like, I can't come home yet. I got to stay. So I tried to recover and just clean the bike and hang out in Moab for a few days, do some fun mountain bike rides. And the weather seemed right 4 days later. So I went for it again. And luckily I did, you know, pull it out. But, I was pretty beat up for a couple weeks after that. It took me like 2 weeks to come out of that hole after the double tap.
Yeah. 200 mile mountain bike rides at a full gas effort. Yeah. Good for you. It's pretty cool. So everybody should check that out. So where can people follow along with you on social media and stuff? Where can they get all of the info on you or website, all that stuff?
The Instagram is probably my most common right now. It's P Stetina. My name looks like Stetina, S-T-E-T-I-N-A. P Stetina, and then Twitter is Peter Stetina, fully written out. That's what I do. I'm working on a website which has existed, but it's not actually public all COVID. That's like something I just haven't gotten around to. But yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Website for the pay dirt rides, like stetinaspaydirt.com, something like that.
Yeah, stetinaspaydirt.com. Awesome. And there's the same handles there on the Instagram and stuff. So hopefully that goes forward next year.
Great. Fingers crossed for you, man. Thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate you spending some time with us.
No worries. This was a lot of fun. It was good to catch up and reconnect and hell yes.
Thank you, Pete.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
I would love to see you, Tyler, at a gravel event soon. I've seen you have re-caught the love for biking again, which was so good to see when we ran into each other in Sonoma County out in Jimtown a few years ago. And I think you might have more fun on some of these gravel events.
I think you're right. Is there a gruppetto?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, it's full party in the back. Like at Belgian Waffle Ride, like one of the final aid stations, there's a tequila bar in the forest. You just got to walk like 10 feet off track.
That's great. Hey, well, awesome to see you and really happy to see you just thriving. And like I said earlier, like you're a great ambassador for just not only the sport of cycling, but you're just an awesome person, Pete. And
thanks. Appreciate that.
I'm really happy to know you and say hi to your father and say hi to your Uncle Wayne.
Definitely. Will do. Okay. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. Thanks again, man.
Take care.
Peace.
Thank you again to Pete Stetina. Thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. Once again, if you are able to support the podcast and help us grow organically by word of mouth, obviously is a great way to help us.
with that. So if you have some friends that you think would be into what we do on the podcast, please let them know about it. Liking and sharing, commenting on posts on social media, that's a help too. Of course, subscribing on whatever podcast platform you find the show on, that is also greatly appreciated, as are positive reviews and ratings. Thank you again. We will be back to you very soon with another episode.